The speaker, the right channel speaker is intermittent.
Okay.
We will, while Milford finishes doing the slides, we can get started. Our next speaker is Victor Ledeen. He is the music director of KQED-FM, which is the fifth largest. The speaker is off again. Oh, it's on. Okay. It is still intermittent. Yeah, well, it's hooked up with Canon plugs, so the right speaker is still intermittent. Maybe we ought to drop the level on the right speaker. Are you have stereo?
No.
Okay, why don't we drop the level on the right speaker if that's annoying? KQED-FM is the fifth largest classical music, non-commercial classical music station in the country. He is also the director of KQED's Sound Archive, which is, in addition to the 30,000 or so LPs that is part of their record collection, they have 70,000 discs, tapes, and cylinders, which is considered part of the Sound Archive. He is also the discographer for the San Francisco Symphony Orchestra. He will mention a little bit about the publications which have already been done on the San Francisco Symphony Orchestra. And he writes program notes for symphony orchestras all around the country, the United States, and Canada. And prior to coming to KQED, he taught at the University of California and Mills College in the electrical engineering departments. And so if we're ready now, here is Victor Ledeen.
Thank you. I'm going to start off with a recording made in 1928. With the San Francisco Symphony, and I said good morning, but I think that what I'm going to do is say probably good evening. San Francisco Symphony has one of the longest recording histories of all of the West Coast symphony orchestras. And this recording, made in 1928, was one of the earliest electrical recordings made by the symphony. The symphony is under the direction of Alfred Hertz. To understand a little bit better about the San Francisco Symphony and its recording history, I should give you a little bit of a background on the orchestra. In the winter of 1850, there was a concert called the Grand Concert, and it was a collection of 40 musicians that got together and played favorite overtures with trombone soloists. By 1856, Rudolf Herold had organized the Germania Concert Society, whose inaugural concert featured waltzes, solo singing, amazingly enough, Weber's Oberon Overture, and only three movements of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. Although the audience probably yawned throughout this last segment of the concert, the reviewer concluded, and this is a direct quote from the newspapers of the time, "The orchestra embraced the flower of the profession and was, without exception, the best graduated and evenly constructed force we have had the pleasure of listening to in California." That's 1856. That was pretty extravagant praise for those days. Well, Herold's group continued to give concerts over the next 25 years, but attempts to form a permanent orchestra proceeded in fits and starts. Visiting conductors and amateur pickup groups provided some music, and Theodore Thomas and others brought their orchestras to the West. Two ensembles succeeded Herold's in the 1880s, a 40-player orchestra conducted by Louis Homeyer and backed by San Francisco music patron John Parrott, And then there was also the Philharmonic Society Orchestra, which was led by Gustav Hinrichs and supported by Sir Henry Heyman. From 1897 to 1899, Fritz Scheel, who had come from the Vienna Prater Band and who would go on to found the Philadelphia Orchestra, led the new San Francisco Symphony Society, an orchestra that lasted until the 1906 earthquake. Well, San Francisco Symphonies was restored along with the city itself, and spurred on by Walter Damrosch's tour with the New York Symphony in 1908, 21 citizens organized the Musical Association of San Francisco late in 1909. Their aims were the creation of a permanent symphony orchestra in San Francisco, the building of a great opera house near Market Street and Van Ness Avenue, and the establishment of a music conservatory in association with the University of California. After 2 years of fundraising, on December 8, 1911, the association presented its first concert under the direction of Henry Hadley. The program was the Meistersinger Overture by Richard Wagner, Tchaikovsky's Symphony No. 6, Haydn's Theme and Variations orchestrated by Hadley from the Emperor Quartet, and Liszt's Les Preludes. The only notice I could find in newspapers was that the performance began on time. That's what the newspaper said. That was the San Francisco Chronicle. And the critic continued by saying, and before some of the start, the smart set had found their seats. So it was obviously a great success. Now, I've brought a number of interesting slides. The unfortunate thing with most orchestras, especially in younger orchestras, is that they did not keep, the San Francisco certainly Symphony did not keep most of its archival materials. And in fact, a lot of materials were thrown out. So it is virtually impossible finding good photographs from the early history of the San Francisco Symphony. The various archives around the Bay Area have a few things of their own from the early history of the symphony, but very little has been preserved, so it's been very difficult getting photographs. This photograph is particularly interesting. I have not yet been able to locate the original, and the original must be quite fantastic. This was a performance from 1924 of Handel's Messiah. The location is Civic Auditorium, and there is a chorus of 600, not to mention an orchestra of about 120. There are 10,000 patrons in the auditorium. Alfred Hertz believed in doing things in a big way. And 1924 was an important year for another reason. He, at that time, went over to Camden, New Jersey, and decided to speak to some of his colleagues there and signed a contract with the San Francisco Symphony to start recording the orchestra for Victrola. The Victor Talking Machine Company at that time was very pleased, but wasn't sure how to tackle the project because it meant dragging a lot of very heavy and expensive equipment all the way to the West Coast. There was nothing in San Francisco for recording. And in fact, there was a big question as to where shall we record. Being that Alfred Hertz was famous for his Wagner interpretation, he chose as his first records Wagner's music. And we're going to hear, I'd like to play the entire recording because it is one of the few acoustic recordings made by the San Francisco Symphony. The year is 1925. The orchestra is not all there. By that I mean there are very few members of the orchestra. No pejorative double meaning to that phrase. This really disturbed Alfred Hertz, and in some of his letters he writes to some of his colleagues that, I wish I could reproduce the full orchestral sound. I am not happy with the recordings that I've made. The orchestra sounds like a tin band. 1925, part one of the Good Friday Spell, music by Wagner. It was recorded in the Court Theater. It was dubbed at 78 RPM. From the master, by the way, which was supposedly recorded at 78 RPM, but who knows for sure, because a lot of the records have been, not the actual discs, but the actual paper has been lost. The San Francisco Symphony has not been very good about keeping any of their recordings. In fact, if you were to ask them, they do not have any recordings Seiji Ozawa's period, which would be, mean nothing pre-1916. They don't have any collection at all. Majority of the correspondence between the Victor engineers and Alfred Hertz also seems to have disappeared. That was 1925. Now, a little bit more history and a new slide for you. This is a really wonderful photograph, and in fact, the reason I say that is because this is a meeting between two conductors, Henry Hadley and Alfred Hertz. Alfred Hertz, the one with the beard and the hat. Hadley had come to San Francisco as the conductor of the Seattle Symphony. He was, of course, also well known as a composer at the time. And he led an ensemble of 65 musicians in total for 4 years, from 1911 to 1915, and established fairly high musical values for the orchestra. He was earning at that time $100 a week for his conducting. And in 1913, he was able to purchase for the symphony, and this was a major step forward for the orchestra, the complete Pittsburgh Symphony sheet music collection. Pittsburgh Symphony in 1913 went bankrupt, and they were selling everything off, including their sheet music. A bit of trivia for you, in case you want to try a historic question about the Pittsburgh Symphony and your friends. It's interesting to know that in 1912, there was a city ordinance in San Francisco that compelled the removal of hats during performances, and all programs of the San Francisco Symphony had in big bold letters, "Will the ladies please remove their hats?" I guess men didn't have to do that in 1912. During the winter of 1916, the audiences were surveyed on such things as lighting the concert hall for students who wanted to study their scores. Well, the audiences did not like that, and the dark house prevailed for a number of years. It was a vote of 175 to 45, so students lost on that one. In 1915, Alfred Hertz joined the San Francisco Symphony, and the Chronicle had another headline: "Alfred Hertz wins triumph with symphony orchestra." He was, of course, Metropolitan Opera's leading Wagnerian conductor, and though a flu epidemic caused the cancellation of 5 weeks of the 1918-1919 season, many of the orchestra members were very ill, and local funds continually worried the association, Hertz led the symphony for 15 years, from 1915 to 1930. He enlarged the size of the group and hired the first women in any American symphony orchestra. Youth concerts were begun in 1923, and the recording contract with RCA Victor and the standard hour, radio hour, began in 1925 and 1926. We're gonna. The difficulty that I had in selecting music is that there's a lot of it, and the question arises: what do you select and what do you present? Well, between 1925 and a flurry of correspondence between the Victor engineers and Alfred Hertz, it was decided that, aside from the fact that the new electrical process was being used, that Hertz was not going to record with what he called a tin band. He wanted the full sound of the orchestra. And the result was one of the earliest electrical recordings by the symphony, 1926. And I'm not going to say what it is, because it'll surprise you that a major orchestra would be recording this, but they did, and the string sound is quite astonishing for 1926. Hertz was on his way. Thank you. Caprice Viennoise by Fritz Kreisler. Interesting selection. It seemed like Alfred Hertz was destined to record all the Pops' favorites. And in fact, from the children's concerts and the Pops' concerts that he initiated, he did record quite a few overtures and tidbits like this Kreisler piece. But there is a world of difference between the sound of the strings and the lack of strings, virtual lack of strings, in the 1925 Wagner recording. So, as I said, Alfred Hertz was on his way. The photograph you see before you is a photograph made, I don't have the exact date, but I think either 26 or 27, and that is the Court Theater in San Francisco. It's a small ensemble. Acoustically, not the best place to do anything, and but the Victor Talking Machine Company managed to do some recordings in that little hall. Well, it was time to try Wagner again. There was no question about it in Alfred Hertz's mind. He wanted to see if he could reproduce the sounds of Wagner once again. He was unhappy with the Good Friday spell, so he tried the prelude from Tristan. He wrote to a friend, "Sounds lousy." His main complaint was not that the strings weren't being recorded, that he couldn't really play loudly because of the distortion factor in the recordings, and you heard a little bit of distortion there. He was rather unhappy. He said that you can't get clarity. He wanted clarity, and he got that in 1928 with another recording of Wagner. This is a segment from the Liebestod from Tristan. Listen specifically to the harp sounds. By the way, nothing was done. There's no processing on these recordings. So what you're hearing is the direct 78 RPM disc. Again, he wasn't quite happy. He said, well, the thing is it's too muffled. It's too dry. I want something, a juicy sound from the orchestra, and I'm not getting it. So there was, in 1928, a number of recordings were made, and the symphony released its first album set, which was incidental music from the Midsummer Night's Dream of Mendelssohn. It was also the first time that his master's voice in England took to distributing some of the San Francisco Symphony recordings. And this, by the way, this recording stayed in its catalog through the late 1940s. Amazingly enough, it still sold that late. 1928 recording of the Scherzo from Mendelssohn's Midsummer Night's Dream. It's an HMV pressing.
Thank you.
the first big project with the San Francisco Symphony, the Mendelssohn Incidental Music. But Alfred Hertz, who is the person you see in front of you, decided that he wanted to hear some good German music. And what better music than Brahms? Rather curious interpretation of that piece. That's what Hertz felt was good German music for 1929 recording. They moved into what I have not been able to track this either theater or warehouse, but this was recorded in Oakland, that Brahms Hungarian Dance. He was still unhappy because he was not able to get either the loudness or the softness that he wanted. And that finally came in 1930 when he undertook the Leonora Overture, number 3 of Beethoven. This is just a segment of it on the discs. It is the third side. Side 3 of the Leonora Overture. 1930 was the year, the last year that Alfred Hertz was to spend with the symphony, although he came back as a guest conductor a number of times, including at this exposition in 1935, where he's seen conducting the San Francisco Symphony with a microphone hanging above them, because that was a broadcast by radio station KPO, part of their standard hour broadcasts, and KPO is now KNBR in San Francisco. His final recording session with the Victor Talking Machine Company, Victrola, released Massenet's ballet Le Cid, and this was also the symphony's second album set. Indeed, they did do a good job on this recording. Alfred Hertz resigned in 1930, was succeeded by the English conductor Basil Cameron and also Cy de Brouwen. They both shared the podium for the next 4 years. De Brouwen directed the orchestra during the 1932-33 season, and it was the first in the new War Memorial Opera House. He had been conductor of the Moscow Opera, was a prolific composer, and would later win great success as a conductor in Sweden. Well, financial uncertainties for the orchestra were magnified in the 1930s by the Great Depression, and it nearly caused the symphony to shut down during the 1934-35 season. One of the few concerts was ruefully dubbed the Meeting of the Creditors. The people of San Francisco came to the rescue of their orchestra in 1935. In what was a remarkable demonstration of civic pride, they voted a half-cent increase in the tax rate to assure financial assistance for the symphony. They also scored a major coup by inviting Pierre Monteux as music director. He was, of course, well known for his conducting of Diaghilev's Ballet Russe, and he was also the conductor of the Boston Symphony Orchestra. He introduced Petrushka and the Rite of Spring. He came to basically retire in San Francisco, and it took 11 years. The photograph you see here is Darius Milhaud, Alfred Hertz, and Pierre Monteux in the corner at one of their final meetings. Now, in the background, you're hearing César Franck's a segment of the symphony. This was the first recording made in 1941 with Pierre Monteux and the San Francisco Symphony Orchestra in the San Francisco Opera House. This recording was done via telephone lines to RCA headquarters in Los Angeles. It was done between midnight and 6 in the morning. Everything was shut off, including the telephones, the bathrooms, everything was closed off, and the Opera House became a recording studio. 1941. That is the San Francisco Opera House, roughly around 1940. Very plain looking backdrop, acoustical shell. Pierre Monteux. There are very few action photographs of him with the San Francisco Symphony. This is one of them. Same session. The orchestra expanded its staff and finally had over 100 musicians. And that's where the modern history of the orchestra began in 1941 with this first recording of César Franck's symphony. By the way, he recorded it quite a few more times, and actually twice with the orchestra. This 1941 recording, and then followed by the 1950 recording, which was also re-released on the LPs at that time. I could probably spend the rest of the morning here playing wonderful things for you from the symphony archives. Unfortunately, we don't have the time. I do want to quickly run through some of the photographs I have, because this gives you a better impression of what the orchestra was about in its early days. And I think you might enjoy just seeing a few of these photographs. This was the Stanford-Cal game. Even this, they decorated the San Francisco Opera House. That is the San Francisco Opera House, believe it or not. I don't know whether those were artificial trees or just dry trees, but there they were. This is the view if you were a musician with the symphony. This is what you would see. Fascinating view. Another view from another side. Yet another photograph. This was an attempt to raise the and change the orchestra around a little bit. And this was for one of the recording sessions for KPO Standard Hour. Noam Blinder, concertmaster. I'm going to skip through quickly through the orchestra members, because there are some wonderful photographs. They were all ready to be photographed for 1946. Souvenir brochure. In the background is the Dundee Symphony, which was the first recording on discs by the Symphony, San Francisco Symphony, Symphony No. 2. Rather creative photographs for the time period. They also photographed them playing cards and chess. Lev Shore, the pianist with the orchestra. And yet again, another extravaganza in the Civic Auditorium, this time with Pierre Monteux. Overhead shot, part of the KPO Standard Hour broadcasts, overview from the Opera House of the orchestra. And this was the recording booth that was set up specifically for some of these recordings you're hearing in the background. Alto Rhapsody. And this is a session, I'm during the recording session of Ibert. Heifetz, Gruenberg, Monteux. Recording with the orchestra for one of its recording sessions. Pierre Monteux. They went to a masquerade. I couldn't resist throwing that one in. Wonderful mustache. That's it. Thank you very much.
While we change tapes and carousels, we'll let you stand up in place. We're going to try to get going in about 2 to 3 minutes.